Mr. Speaker.
You're at the intersection of business and politics. This is the 14th and G podcast from Melman Consulting. Now, here's our host, Dean Hingson.
Thank you for setting your podcast dial to 14th and G. Yes, once again, I am your host, Dean Hingson. Like the nice man says every time, joined once again here in the 14th and G Worldwide Studios with Republican Bruce Melman.
Okay.
Democrat David Thomas.
Hello, hello.
And we're going to cover, it's the Big 25. We're going to cover all of the Big 25 in 25 minutes. My stepson Thomas told me to refer to it as the Big 25. That's what we're calling this year. I believe that's what the kids are calling it. So, hey, this is the Big 25. I'll tell you, this is Q2 at least is turning out to be big, big, big. We got trade, tariffs, peace, pause, I don't know. We got Powell, the Fed, the bond market dictating terms. Elon Musk, is he at Doge or is he at Tesla? We got the reconciliation bill making its way through Congress. RFK is making America healthy again. I didn't even know petroleum was in food. I don't know, we can play Secretary Roulette here maybe towards the end. Secretary Hegseth, Secretary Bessent, Secretary Lutnick, Secretary Rubio. Who's winning the cabinet sweepstakes? But
well, and ladies, watch your handbags.
I forgot about Secretary Noem. Hey, last time we were here, it was the day before Liberation Day. Are you liberated? Do you feel liberated?
My 401k feels liberated.
Liberated from returns. add a few more years on to the onto the retirement picture, Bruce. You love what you do, though. So
I love what I do.
You got no issues.
I'm looking forward to 20, 35, and 35 minutes.
Maybe we should have invited our resident trade nerd, Alex Perkins, in for this podcast, because I think we probably ought to try to level set where we are with trade and tariffs. At one point, it was the U.S. versus the world, maybe we're going to get some deals here that's going to shrink our opponents down. But this seems, if you sort of cut through all the noise and the clutter, the EU, Canada, Mexico, this is really seems to be coming down to a U.S. versus China. The decoupling, Bruce, that you've been talking about for years and years is really in full swing.
You know, when you're driving too fast on the road and you hit a pothole you didn't see, it's a really big one. And then all of a sudden you start hearing a noise you're not supposed to hear, a kind of rattle. And it's time to slow the car down and try to figure out how bad is this thing. Feels like that's where we've gotten to. Liberation Day was not well received by the bond market, which shifted from nearly a decade of there is no alternative by the Mag 7, by America, to sell America. We were seeing it not just in equities, but all of a sudden it got harder to sell bonds, and the bond American treasuries are being dumped. That's not supposed to happen. It's something looks like it was starting to break. That seemed to cause the administration to switch from a fight everybody all at once to let's all try to fight China together. China was prepared. They've been preparing for 5 years or more. So they said, we'll see your 185% tariffs and meet you with 145% tariffs. According to reports, the administration realized this would also be problematic for domestic manufacturing, for the reshoring they're trying to engender, for consumers, what the prices they pay, for whether things would even be available on the shelves. And we have shifted now to looking to cut deals with China. Surely we can all be gentlemen and bring our tariffs down from triple digits significantly further. And add to that, Chairman Powell will now be invited to the Christmas party, which was nice because I was worried we were going to have to invite him to the Melman home. And I'm not sure we could afford him.
No intentions of firing the chairman.
I like your analogy, and I think the way you laid things out was correct. The only thing I would dispute with that analogy of the car hitting a pothole is the correct analogy is you have dug a giant pothole in your own driveway, and then you are suddenly surprised that you have a flat tire when you hit the hole that you dug. I think what we've learned this week here, and we haven't seen this, we're almost 100 days in, 90-something days, there are guardrails for the president here. And we hadn't really seen him observing any guardrails here. Some of the things that we've talked about in our presentation, Bruce, they didn't seem to have an effect on him like we thought they might. But I think the markets do have an effect here. He is down thousands and thousands of points here, and he cares about that. And you can't go and criticize Jerome Powell and say you are going to fire him and expect the markets not to react. So I think that what we've finally seen here is a little bit of pushback, and he's reacting to it.
The only thing I would disagree even modestly with you there, DT, is I don't think it's the equity markets. I think it's the bond markets. And we talked about it on a prior one of these. The United States government needs to refinance between $7 and $8 trillion of existing debt, as well as go out and borrow $2 trillion more. And in February and March, all of, notwithstanding the trade rhetoric that was not helping the equity markets, the cost of borrowing was coming down as global investors fled to the safety of U.S. treasuries. After the Liberation Day tariffs, people were fleeing U.S. treasuries. It became more expensive for the U.S. to borrow. To me, that's where the Trump put, it turns out, resides, not in the S&P, which unfortunately didn't do well, but rather in the bond markets where, you know, the long game is we were bringing down the cost of refinancing $9 trillion of debt this year. If the cost of that goes up, that's not good.
And the bond market is the canary in the coal mine for the leading economic indicators that really matter. Unemployment, inflation, GDP growth. Those are leading economic indicators you can't avoid. Those are the economic indicators that people feel when they go to the gas pump, when they go to the grocery store, whether or not they have a job, whether or not their neighbor has a job. And you're sort of, you're staring down the barrel of that bedrock belief that this president has in the efficacy of tariffs to get to the place that he says he wants to get, some form of reindustrialization of the United States of America. They haven't come off that rhetorically. We're just seeing a little bit of that in terms of, maybe 60 or 70% tariffs on China will do for now while we negotiate a deal.
There is no plan. I think that's what people are trying to fool themselves into here. There is such a hope. I mean, the economy 90 days ago coming into this new administration was the best in the world coming out of the pandemic. And we are now on such shaky ground here, and we could bring down the rest of the world's economies with us.
Thanks, Obama.
I really do not think that there is this grand plan here as much as people would like to spin it. He wanted high tariffs. He announced high tariffs here. But, okay, then we're going to now we're going to negotiate. Oh, okay, these are not going to be it changes every day. And I think there is this I'm thankful that the Treasury Secretary Terry is there and seems to have his ear right now instead of Peter Navarro, because he seems to be a calming force. But you can tell the markets are dying for some good news here, and I'm not even sure there's good news. The good news is like, okay, we are going to negotiate with China, but these negotiations aren't going on. And how long is it going to take for these negotiations to take place? And we're not going to do anything unilaterally, so that gets people concerned. There are ships that are heading towards the Port of Long Beach right now with a hell of a lot of goods on them, and they're going to slow down because they don't want to have to pay 145% tariffs.
That seems to me to be the biggest sort of X factor that hasn't been accounted for here, and it's the timeline, right? We have – the United States of America has enormous leverage. We are the world's largest economy. We are the world's reserve currency. It's just that the ability to withstand – in the short and medium term, I mean, this—they know this is going to cause economic disruption, and politically, all right. Maybe the president's dug in. How dug in are his House members? How dug in are his senators? How prepared are they as we get closer and closer to a midterm election year? How prepared are they to withstand short and medium term pain from their constituents to get to the other side, plan or no plan? And I think that's...
It's been a gift for the president here that the House and Senate isn't here these past 2 weeks. They've been at home for the Easter recess. So we don't have them having to respond to reporters to every stupid thing that the president's been saying over the past 2 weeks here on tariffs here, because there'll be a feeding frenzy when we come back if there's continues to be this level of uncertainty, and I think there will be.
Well, look, it seems like there is a recognition now that this needs to be done in a more orderly and logical process. To your point, it sounds like Secretary Bessent is being listened to, and that we, if you want to reshore, you need to make sure that American manufacturers get access to the things that they need. So the collective hope is that instead of everywhere, every fight, all at once, we're now going to see a process by which let's cut a deal with India, which feels like the first in the queue. Let's cut a deal with Japan, and let's come up with deals starting with allies and you know, rinse and repeat on our way to trying to figure out how can we rectify some of the ways where the administration is correct that China doesn't play by the rules the rest of the world has played by. That as Obama's former U.S. trade representative has correctly pointed out, the global economic and global trade system was broken by China. But the challenge is our reaction can't be blowing it up because we're still major beneficiaries, and because there isn't a ready-to-be-implemented plan that doesn't cause extreme disruption.
You've told me many times hope is not a strategy, Bruce. And I think right now you're hoping for a plan. You want to make deals with allies. You shouldn't treat your friends like dirt.
Hey, look,
and he's been doing that to everybody. Look, I don't know who our allies are right now. Is it Canada? Is it Mexico? Is it old Europe? Is it new Europe? I don't know who it is. We picked a fight with everybody in the world. Good move.
This is happening. So let's all do hope for the best. Bruce, great segue. We're closing out the 2-week Easter recess. We're closing it out. The circus is coming back to town next week. And boy, have we got a hell of a May in store. You know, playing back on the tariff and trade debate, what may or may not be happening in the economy, and let's, you know, there's a lot of forecasts out there of economic downturn. And you know, if we start to see that actually reflected in the statistics in the weeks and months to come, we've got the president's key legislative priority working its way through Congress right now, the reconciliation bill. Big tax piece, big spending piece in terms of needing to save about $1.5 trillion. House and Senate finally both got their budget resolutions agreed to and done before leaving. That kicks the process into the committees. We're going to start to see the House go first with markups in House committees. And then I think the stat I saw, there's about, in the entire House Republican Conference, there's about 70 members who were here for the 2017 reconciliation battle that gave us the TCJA, the Trump tax cuts. They're going to watch that House bill go through the meat grinder of the Senate process in reconciliation, and they'll be amazed afresh at what comes out the other end. So the House is going to try to put this on the floor the week of May 17th and get their bill passed and send it over to the Senate before they leave for the Memorial Day recess. That sounds awfully ambitious. I think we're looking at a pretty long, hot summer for reconciliation.
I'm not going to tell you you're wrong. You're a keen, close watcher, and you're right. First, you got to get through the House. As you guys know from our conversations, I continue to be amazed at Speaker Johnson's ability to get stuff through because the math isn't there. I can't figure out how he keeps elected. As Speaker, it just feels like each time, well, now the Freedom Caucus is going to blow it up or the moderates are going to take a walk. Once again, I don't see how you can both get the moderates who don't want huge cuts and the conservatives who want massive cuts, to say nothing of whatever you get out of the House. Somebody's walking the plank and it's coming back different from the Senate. So I'm with you. The question is whether the negative economic headwinds caused by all of the tariff talk we just went through, does that make the Republicans circle the wagons and say, we need to pass a good tax bill because that gives us a tailwind, in which case we're back to it's 3D chess, baby. The whole uncertainty around tariffs was to set up getting a really hard tax vote through, or does it somehow diminish the president's capability to pick up the phone and turn any House freedom tiger into a kitten?
Short term tailwind for this process, because they're going to need some light at the end of the economic tunnel. DT, Mike Johnson, the Sam Rayburn of our times. Yes, your thoughts?
Oh boy, you know, he certainly benefits from having a whip and a head of legislative affairs at the White House, who also happens to be the president here. Bruce, you are correct. Every time Mike Johnson seems like he's up against the wall, he manages to get to 218. But how he manages to do it is not him. It's the president. And if the president continues to show up and to twist arms and berate people until they vote his way, he'll continue to be successful. I think you're right. They have to get this reconciliation bill done, or it does seem like that house of cards is going to start to fall apart around him. Super high stakes poker. The problem is the president's also going to need to be in the ante rooms of all these individual committees who are going to be passing these their reconciliation, their pieces of the bill over the next couple of weeks here. Energy and Commerce has to cut a ton.
Big deal.
From Medicaid, Medicare, you name it. They're going to have to cut it. So I hope he's going to, you know, reserve some time in that ante room in Rayburn, because they're going to need him.
Yeah. So there was a mini revolt before they got the budget resolution through the House. Where a couple dozen members were like, no way. Speaker Johnson, Leader Thune, they stood up, locked arms at a press conference, and Thune gave a very LBJ-like statement of, I am going to do my best to get that $1.5 trillion in savings. And the tension being with all the things the president wants in the tax code that cost money, no tax on tips and other priorities. You got senators in cycle who Republican senators in cycle who do not want $850 billion in Medicare cuts hung around their neck when they're campaigning for reelection. This is going to, but you've got those hardliner House Republicans who were promised and are want to hold that promise that they're going to see 1.5 when it's all said and done. They're going to see $1.5 trillion in cuts, and I just, you know, is the Senate capable of delivering that? That is, that's going to be an enormous task.
Well, and yes, and let's see what effects the tariffs are having on the economy 6 weeks, 8 weeks from now, if we're talking about getting this bill done in the summertime. To date, we've seen no Republicans willing to even question the president's priorities here and how he's moving forward on really anything. If the economy starts to turn a little bit, are some of them going to try to create a little bit of separation there? Maybe. They haven't done it yet.
Well, we'll see. It's like I said, they're going to blow through. I think the Memorial Day recess, the next backstop is going to be the 4th of July. I think they got to get this done by the August break. If they break for August, you know, they're gone 5-6 weeks, come back after Labor Day. You're really putting yourself up against the wall. I think one sort of upside here is they have put the debt limit increase inside the reconciliation bill. I think Secretary Bessent said he was going to announce the X date by which the borrowing authority has to be extended next. He's going to announce that next week. If you see that sort of late summer, something like a mid-August, administrations are famous for using the X date of the debt limit to their political benefit. I think we'll see that here once again to try to drive action. Well, I don't know. Take your pick. Secretary Bessent.
Yes.
Secretary Lutnick. Secretary Rubio. Secretary Gnome. Secretary, is there another one I'm missing that's been in the news?
Yeah, let's talk about Hegseth. I was wondering how long we could talk about that knucklehead. How many signal chats do you think this guy has going right now?
I don't know, but there's a lot of information winging its way around.
You think George Marshall sent a telegram to his wife and his brother and his personal lawyer saying, hey, big deal on D-Day. Don't tell anybody, but we're launching the ships. Get ready.
Honey, overlord.
Shh, don't tell.
Normandy, beach, stop. June 5th, stop.
Don't tell. This whole, it, 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 frankly, this shouldn't come as a surprise to anybody. The guy was not qualified to be Secretary of Defense. He wasn't even qualified to be a Fox host during the week. He's a weekend Fox and Friends news host who now runs the largest bureaucracy and fighting force in the history of the world. You know, you can't, the people whose shoes he stands in now, the ones who are alive are rolling their eyes, and the ones in debt are rolling over in their graves. It is absurd about what this guy is doing. He was out on the Easter egg roll lawn, criticizing the media for the leaks when he is the leaker. He is the guy who's shooting off his mouth on everything to brag. Now, why you need to brag to your personal lawyer, I do not know. But it puts troops at risk. It is laughable. And the buck stops with the president here. I know he doesn't want to feel like the libs get a scalp here, but this is a guy who's doing it to himself. Under any normal circumstance here, this guy wouldn't have gotten the job in the first place. He should be gone.
Well, look, in all seriousness, and I know you're being serious, DT, but this is the most easily forecast sort of situation for Secretary Hegseth to find himself in. The Pentagon bureaucracy is famous for bouncing and controlling outsiders in the civilian leadership. And, you know, he should have known what he didn't know. And now to come back and say, well, the deep state's acting against me. Of course they are.
Well, but no, it's not the deep state. These reports are coming from the MAGA guys. These are the people that he brought in. That's the piece. Here's my question.
You're talking about the guys he frog marched out of the Pentagon, like his chief of staff?
I'm talking about the people who are claiming these things are people who were brought in with him, not longtime career generals. So that Paul Kane in the Post wrote about this, that like all of the hits on him have always come from conservative, pro-Trump. John Elliott, who was the spokes guy, he was in the Trump 1.0 Veterans Administration. He's had a podcast, not 14th and G level, but he's had a podcast that has been triumphalist for President Trump for 4 years. He is MAGA through and through, and he's the guy, I don't know why he wrote it in Politico, but he's the guy who came out in criticism. He's not the liberal media. He spent years attacking the liberal media. My question for you, Mr. Hinkson,
yes,
as a former Senate Chief of Staff,
yes,
is I feel like my whole career, this fact pattern, which, sure, we haven't had, but let's say we had the fact pattern, or I don't know, say the Secretary of State is emailing her daughter about who committed an attack. Like, that leads to oversight hearings. So will the Armed Services Committee, will the Intelligence Committee say, we'd like to have a hearing on question one, did this information get shared with civilians? And number two, why did this information, just the basics to learn what happened and why? I haven't heard anything about hearings. So do you have you heard anything? Is that because they're out of session?
They're out of session. I think it'll be the big tell. If and when Chairman Wicker at the Senate Armed Services Committee schedules the oversight hearing on this issue, I think that's sort of the beginning of the end. I mean, frankly, he doesn't even have to schedule it on the specifics of the signal issue. The next time he comes up for any kind of an oversight hearing, the Democrats on the committee are going to do the work for him. But I think if you see congressional oversight, particularly from Chairman Wicker, who's been pretty quiet about this so far, I think that's going to be tough to come back from.
I got a prediction. There's not going to be any oversight hearings on this guy. Are you kidding me?
Senate will be heard.
The Senate will not be heard. These guys knew he wasn't qualified when they voted for the first time.
Although here again, my money says that Armed Services, the Chairman Wicker, not calls for any departure, just says we are going to have a hearing to understand what happened. Maybe they'll do it private hearing, and then, of course, it'll all leak. But what I can't fathom is they're saying, nothing to see here. We're not even going to inquire. Maybe we'll have another Benghazi hearing, which, by the way, I'd still like to get to the bottom of that if possible.
Well, we're going to get to the bottom of it all. Questions will be asked. Questions will be answered. But we're going to have to wait for the next time on 14th and G when we will once again cover all of the Big 25 in 25 minutes or less. Bruce Melman, David Thomas, thanks for joining me on 14th and G.
Thank you, Dean.
Wait, I have more to say on Hegseth.
Say thank you, Dean.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast, brought to you by the lobbying firm of Melman Consulting. For more, just type 14th and G podcast into your favorite search engine or look for 14th and G wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe.
Beam me up, Mr. Speaker.